Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, November 15, 2021. Sudanese civil society groups react to the killing of protesters over the weekend.
We're worried about the democratic transition to take place, because we now see that the military is again on top of the transitional council.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Witnesses say at least five protesters were killed during a nationwide demonstration across several Sudanese cities on Saturday against last month's military takeover. The Al Jazeera News Network reports its Sudan bureau chief has been arrested. Civil society activists and women rights groups are condemning Saturday's attack on protesters in Khartoum by security forces. Six people died and more than 29 others were wounded. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Speaking to South Sudan in Focus, Asanusi Adam, the head of local civil society group Community Progress for Development, or CPD, condemned the use of tear gas and live ammunition on peaceful protesters. He says they were expressing their constitutional rights to demand political change. Adam says, as civil society activist, he and his colleagues remain concerned about the future of the democratic transformation in Sudan.
We are worried about the democratic transition to take place, because we now see that the military is again on top of the transitional council, and it looks like the situation is even way harder than we anticipated. The fact that now all the Freedom and Change Coalition, most of the other political parties are away from the picture.
According to the Sudanese Doctors Association, Sudanese security forces shot at least six protesters on Saturday. The statement says 27 other protesters were injured and are receiving medical care in different hospitals in Khartoum. Sudanese human rights activist Mahassin Dahab also condemned the use of force on protesters, saying it was a setback on the objectives of the Sudanese revolutionaries. Dahab says she expects the people to continue protesting against the military rule because they are tired of military rule over the past three decades.
It was a little bit of a disappointment for us, because the civilian government had worked a lot on achieving peace and maintain the partnership with the military. I think if the military is expected to kill us on the street, like all of the Sudanese now, even though there are peaceful protesters.
Dahab says the military should create some new mechanisms on how to deal with the pro-democracy protesters, because killing them only increases their anger against the government.
They've been killing the people on the street, and the anger of the people is boiling up to the point where it will not be tolerated. If you announce the prime minister soon, the reaction of the streets is not going to be a positive one.
On Thursday last week, Al Burhan announced the formation of 13 members of Sovereign Council, which had its first meeting on Sunday to discuss the situation in the country. Al Burhan has yet to name a prime minister. The military arrested civilian members of the transitional government on October 25th and suspended the joint civilian military government. That government had been operating since 2019 after protests ousted former President Omar al-Bashir. For VOA News, I'm Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Residents in the Jonglei State capital Bor are celebrating the reopening of their clean water station, closed months ago due to flooding. The manager of the water point says The station is able to pump water to more than 40,000 Bor residents, including schools, hotels, government offices, and some homes. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
John Jurkuch, the Bor Water Station manager, says more than 40,000 Bor residents are now able to get purified water. Jurkuch says schools, hotels, government offices and homes now can function normally with access to the clean water.
We have managed to resume production and supply of clean drinking water to the population and to the consumers in Bor town as from yesterday on the 14th. November, people are getting clean water. We have our technicians, our operators work very hard. They managed to dig the pumps and we scoop out flood water and the pumps are now operational.
Bor Water Station, which is the town's main supplier of clean water, was shut down in September when flood waters submerged the pumps. Jurkuch says the station has resumed supplying clean water and urges consumers to pay their monthly subscriptions.
Now that we have resumed, we will need money from them to buy fuel, to buy lubricant, to buy chemicals, to pay the operators for their daily incentive. So one major message is that those households that have pipelines, that have a sand pipe in their compound, they should have burn out with their monthly payment, though they have not consumed for the last one month. We request them to advance so that we will be able to maintain and buy fuel.
Bor town resident Victoria Yom says she is excited that she now has access to purified water again after months of struggling to get clean water.
Since the water station has opened again, it's a great opportunity to the community members because since it had stopped, water points have been congested, especially the boreholes. People were congested there and there were many. So I think it's a good thing that it has opened again. But what I want to request is that at least if more taps could be opened up in different areas by the government, it can help the community.
Ajung Achek, the head teacher at Black Eagle Academy, says he is excited that pupils at his school have access to clean water again. Achek says the lack of purified water had interrupted learning because at least 300 pupils and teachers at school had to walk to other areas to fill up containers with clean water from boreholes after the Bor Water Station stopped operating.
It had affected us since September when it closed. So the kids could go to the old boreholes, so and it was hard for them to come and to come to the school. I mean, it also affected their studies. So could also wait from them to come from the borehole because when they've gone, fetch water. So now it has become easy, so they can just get water here in the school. So and everything is now going on successfully in the school. Anything that needs water, then water is now available in the school.
Public health officials say drinking water straight from the river is dangerous because it can transmit waterborne diseases such as typhoid. Now that the water station is functional, they urge residents to use the purified water and stop fetching and drinking directly from the Nile. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng, reporting from Bor.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is headed to Africa this week for talks in Kenya, Nigeria, and Senegal. His trip comes at a time when many worry that Ethiopia's year-long conflict in the Tigray region may be worsening into a deeper conflict, as VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Tensions in Ethiopia have risen following reports that Ethiopian authorities have rounded up hundreds of Tigrayans, including some who are United Nations and African Union staff members, days after the government declared a state of emergency. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke about the situation at the State Department.
I am very concerned about the potential for Ethiopia to implode, given what we're seeing, both in Tigray, but also as we have different forces and different ethnic groups that are increasingly at odds.
In the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, where officials have urged residents to take up arms to defend themselves, Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokesperson Dina Mufti had this to say about the detained UN and African Union staff members.
Ethiopia is the state of emergency.
There is a force that is undertaking measures to ensure the rule of law prevails in Ethiopia. A resident UN staff should respect the law of the country. They are not in space. They are in Ethiopia. They have to respect Ethiopia's law one by one. If they don't respect the law of the land, they will be legally held accountable, whether they are a UN or African Union staff.
Lincoln said Friday the United States is working closely with the African Union envoy for the Horn of Africa, Olusegun Obasanjo, who is shuttling back and forth between Ethiopia and Kenya to help broker a ceasefire in the conflict that has left thousands dead and hundreds of thousands facing famine. Persuading the parties to hold talks is the only good path forward, former Ambassador Makila James tells VOA.
Dialogue is the only long-term solution because this is a war that could drag on for a long time with no winners and lots of losers.
Ethiopia is likely to be high on the agenda as Blinken makes his first in-person trip to Africa as Secretary of State next week, visiting Kenya, Nigeria, and Senegal. Former U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo traveled to Africa in February of 2020, including a visit to Ethiopia. Competition between the U.S. and China for business and influence in Africa was a major theme during that visit. This time, the State Department says the Secretary is focusing on African solutions for African problems. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, a top U.S. diplomat is visiting Ethiopia. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best advice you have ever gotten?
I got an advice from my mom. She encouraged me to work hard. That she told me, and a very successful woman is a very hardworking woman.
The great one I can remember is the one my father gave to me to study hard. Actually, he was on his, I can say, maybe a deathbed. He was so ill. He had stroke and he was so helpless. He couldn't do anything for me. That was the last day I even saw him. He was like, my son, study hard.
Is from my father. He has always told me that I shouldn't be afraid to learn new things and to take up new challenges, because he said that you're only afraid to take up new challenges when you haven't tried it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Moudou. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. For more on the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's visit to Africa, Muhammad Yusuf speaks to regional security experts from Nairobi on the significance of this trip in the backdrop of the conflict in Ethiopia's Tigray region.
This week, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken kicks off his visit to Africa by stopping in Kenya before heading to Nigeria and Senegal. Blinken will meet Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta to discuss East Africa's regional political and security situation. Professor Chacha Nyaigoti Chacha, a specialist in diplomacy and international relations at the University of Nairobi, says Blinken's visit shows the urgency needed for stability in the region.
Sure that there is peace and tranquility. The Horn of Africa, America recognizes the role that Kenya will have to continue to play to support the international community initiatives which are being undertaken by IGAD, by East African Community, and by the Africa Union Commission and the world at large.
The escalating war in Ethiopia has raised fears of a coup and instability in East Africa's most populous nation. The rebel Tigray People's Liberation Front and other armed groups have threatened to march to Addis Ababa to overthrow Ethiopian Prime Minister Ahmed Abiy's government. Kenya has been pushing for a ceasefire in the year-long war, and on Sunday, Kenyatta met with Abiy and Ethiopian President Sehle Work Zewde to discuss security issues ahead of Secretary Blinken's visit to Kenya. Muridi Mutiga is a Horn of Africa Project Director at the International Crisis Group. He says international efforts are being made to help Ethiopia.
We understand that there is very significant quiet mediation going on in the background, including the Kenyans, the former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo, and we hope that this will continue and potentially that a resolution may be found. But, you know, the lesson of history has been that the Ethiopians usually try and settle their disputes internally by force. So, unfortunately, we have to be a little realistic about what is possible.
U.S. Horn of Africa envoy Jeffrey Feltman came to the region early this month, but the security situation has remained the same. Mutiga says the Ethiopian government and its opponents need to find a quick solution to the crisis.
We now see that the war has entered its second year with no end in sight, really. So I think it's more critical than ever, given Ethiopia's contribution to peace within the region. It's really more urgent than ever that they find a resolution, because continued instability in Ethiopia will definitely have very significant spillover effects, not to mention the horrible cost internally in terms of lives lost, but also an economy that is now in critical care.
Last week, the U.S. government imposed sanctions on the Eritrean military, officials and businesses to show its opposition to the war. Eritrean troops have fought alongside Ethiopian troops in the north of the country. The warring sides continue to dig into the crisis as Tigray leadership push for the ouster of Prime Minister Abiy, while the government is demanding recognition before any negotiation can take place. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The son of the late Libyan strongman, Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, has registered his candidacy for president of Libya. Saif al-Islam Gaddafi submitted his paperwork Sunday in southern oasis town of Sabha. The move comes ahead of elections set for December 24th. VOA's Edward Iranian reports from Cairo.
Arab media showed video of Saif al-Islam Gaddafi formally registering to run for president of Libya in next month's elections. Gaddafi wore traditional Libyan garb, covering most of his head, and was sporting an untrimmed beard. Gaddafi is thought to be living in the western town of Zintan. Gaddafi appeared to be fairly upbeat as he spoke to those around him after announcing his candidacy. Gaddafi has not been seen regularly in the nearly 10 years since his father was overthrown and killed during the 2011 revolution. A spokesman for the International Court of Justice in The Hague told the news media that Sunday's announcement does not change the court's demand that Gaddafi be extradited and tried for crimes against humanity in connection with the uprising. A Libyan court threw out a death sentence against Gaddafi last year. Khatar Abu Diab teaches political science at the University of Paris. Abu Diab tells VOA that what remains unclear is whether Libya's judicial system will ultimately accept Gaddafi's candidacy.
On le voit atterrir à Sabha pour se présenter.
He says that Saif al-Islam Gaddafi presented his candidacy in Sabha, a region controlled by Eastern military commander General Khalifa Haftar, adding that supporters of Gaddafi's father have a strong presence in various parts of southern Libya as well. A major sticking point in the upcoming election, he goes on to say, is who is going to decide which candidates can run and if the candidate who ultimately wins will be acceptable to all parties, including the militias across the country. Libya has had two rival governments, one backed by the UN in Tripoli and one in the eastern part of the country. Currently, there is one government, the UN-supported one. Egyptian media have warned that the Islamist militias, which control Tripoli, are likely to support a candidate from the Muslim Brotherhood group, which is now outlawed in Egypt. Candidates from eastern Libya, including Parliament Speaker Aguila Saleh and General Khalifa Haftar, are not likely to be acceptable to the Islamists either. Paul Sullivan is a Washington-based Middle East analyst. He tells VOA that Libya needs to be free of what he calls the dreadful Gaddafi rule. Sullivan says that if the choice comes down to Gaddafi and the Muslim Brotherhood, then this is an example of the idea in life that one has to choose between the lesser of a bad decision. He says it should be up to the Libyans to make that choice. An international conference on Libya took place in Paris this past Friday with the topic of the coming elections on the agenda. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Despite the discovery of insulin 100 years ago, many children, adolescents, and adults with diabetes struggle to access insulin, as well as basic technologies such as blood glucose meters and test strips. The World Health Organization says health systems are failing to diagnose and care for people living with diabetes. As Moreno Jambo reports from US, at least 19 million Africans are suffering from diabetes with type 2, the most prevalent.
A new report published by the World Health Organization in the lead up to World Diabetes Day, which was celebrated yesterday, Sunday, highlights the alarming state of global access to insulin and diabetes care and finds that high prices, low availability, and human insulin, few producers dominating the insulin market, and weak health systems are the main barriers to universal access. Diabetes occurs when your body either doesn't make enough insulin or cannot use the insulin it makes as well as it should. Type 2 diabetes is the most common type of diabetes across the world, mainly affecting the middle-aged and the old. A Kenyan, Philippe Tale, has been managing diabetes type 2 since 2015 July. He says it all started when he went to watch football and could not see people playing clearly in the pitch.
So I went to the local school. There was a tournament. I couldn't see properly. I remember I could see fellow fans and players on the pitch. They were too tiny, and I was like, oh my goodness, what could be happening? I didn't know I had started developing sugar issues.
One out of every two people needing insulin for type 2 diabetes do not get it. Itale says managing diabetes is very costly.
Diabetes is not easy to manage. It's very expensive. Not so many people can afford the kind of drugs that can manage sugar levels, can balance sugar levels. You know, it's very expensive. The drugs are very expensive. It's so draining, you know. What I want to urge the government to do is to try and find a way of subsidizing prices of this medicine to ensure that every diabetic person is able to afford this kind of medicine.
Dr. Daniel Katambo, a consultant physician and local practitioner in Kenya, says type 2 diabetes can be reversed, especially for the newly diagnosed or those who have had diabetes for less than 7 years.
Type 2 diabetes now can be put into remission and can be reversed, and especially for those people who have had a new diagnosis, and also those people who have had diabetes for less than 7 years. We now have a lot of hope that we can sell to patients that that type 2 diabetes is not a death sentence. You don't have to take medication continuously. With appropriate lifestyle change guided by your doctors, we can now achieve type 2 diabetes reversal or remission.
Dr. Katambo says diabetes is increasing at a high rate in Kenya as many are diagnosed at late stages, making it difficult to manage the condition.
Kenya is facing a huge burden to non-communicable diseases, especially diabetes. The figures are quite staggering. You find that we have almost 44% of Kenyans with type 2 diabetes might not know that they have it. This leads to delayed management. If you look at that person who is diagnosed late, then they have challenges. The disease will be more costly, and this presents a huge challenge in our healthcare system, not just to the individual.
In a statement, the WHO Director General Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus said that the organization is working with countries and insulin manufacturers to expand access to this life-saving medicine for everyone who needs it. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday. We now leave you with the song Aisha by Khalid.
Comme si je n'existais pas. Elle est passée à côté de moi. Sans un regard, reine de Saba. J'ai dit Aïcha, prends tout est pour toi. Voici les perles, les bijoux. Aussi au retour de ton cou. Les fruits bien mûrs au goût de miel. Ma vie, Aïcha, si tu m'aimes. Aïcha, regarde-moi. Oh, oh, Aïcha, Aïcha, réponds-moi. Je dirai les mots, les poèmes. Je jouerai les musiques du ciel. Je prendrai les rayons du soleil pour éclairer tes yeux. Aïcha, écoute-moi. Oh, oh, oh.
نبغيك عايشة ونموت عليك هادي سيد حياتي.
We have been listening to Khalid and the song Aisha. Thanks for allowing us into your cars, homes, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.